If you're interested in creating GPS-triggered audio tours as a bit of a side hustle or maybe a main hustle, then this is the episode for you. Today, we're talking to Ian Manley from VoiceMap. To my eyes, Ian Manley has led a pretty interesting life. He went to UCT after school and studied the same course that I did, film, media, and visual studies. After that, he went to London on a working holiday visa and managed to land a role at the Daily Telegraph's travel desk. He's always loved travel, and to fund his travels, he then took a position running a pub in the English countryside, saving enough money to embark on an epic overland journey from London to Shanghai with his partner Claire. They started documenting their travels on an early version of WordPress, and they started building an audience. They then settled in Shanghai for 3 years, and they continued their adventures across Southeast Asia and India, enriching their blog with stories of people and places that offered unique glimpses into diverse cultures. Then they returned to South Africa for a couple of weddings, and Ian realized that if he continued his travels with Claire to China, he would probably lose touch with his friends, they would start having kids, start building families, and he would no longer really be able to relate to them, so he decided to stay. He found a job developing a GPS-guided tour through Namibia, and in that time he could see that there would be a shift from the dashboard-based GPS hardware system to an app-based solution for travel. He found some investment through a Singaporean incubator, and that began the journey towards what VoiceMap is today, a global platform with more than 1,000 tours from across the world that creators make for listeners. Well, so you got some investment, and then now comes the step of building the thing, right? So you've got the GPS functionality and all that, but then you have to, and this is back in the days of the iPhone 4, build an app. The UI, the writing, contacting. So how did you... That, let's say, was hard and took a long time. What about the step of finding creators, solving the problem of you not being from the Rhine, and how did you connect with people who are and get them to make stuff for you?
Funnily, that's never been that much of a problem because... I think because the medium itself is so much fun. Mm. And so people will do it as a creative project, even if they're not sure what they're likely to get out of it, what the return might be financially. And so in any business like this, any platform business, you have this problem of, you know, a two-sided marketplace where you have to both get supply and demand, and they have to be symmetrical to some extent. Otherwise, there's not enough content, there's not enough tours for all the people who want to do them, or there's not enough users, not enough people buying tours for the people creating them. And I think in the beginning, we managed to convince people to create tours by through the fact that it was an interesting concept, right? People kind of got it, they liked it, and they thought, well, maybe this goes somewhere. And so they would do that, I think, because we hadn't validated it that well yet. They did it somewhat as a gamble, and so they didn't invest that much time into making great tours. And the demand side was hard, and still is hard, right? It's a crowded marketplace out there, and we're not just competing for the market share of audio tours. I mean, we're pretty dominant in that space. We're competing with everything else you might do on a trip. And, you know, this is when people are at their busiest, when they are trying to squeeze as much out of every day as possible. And there are a lot of people advertising for their little portion of that. So it's a tricky place to scale, but you know, we have achieved a certain scale now that means that some of our producers are doing quite well. And once you have those stories to tell, once you have people who at least are making a decent passive income, I'm not talking about anybody who can go full time, although we actually have some producers who could maybe this year just focus on producing audio tours, and that would be a living for them. Wow. And I'm talking about people who live in Europe and North America, where life is, you know, things are expensive. And so once you have those stories, once you have these people who are making some money, it's much easier to get producers onto the platform.
Right. Yeah, because then there's that additional incentive. I mean, I could see browsing through Cape Town's list, there are a number of free tours there are certainly a number of artists and creators who would think like, oh, this is a wonderful thing I can make for my kids or just for people I know. Or how many people are creating what I would call, I guess, fictional content?
Very few. It's very hard to sell. If I'm honest.
Because there's a fairy tour, I believe, somewhere in Christenbosch.
And somebody who is, I think, quite a big part of the podcasting community in this country, John Bartman.
Oh, don't know that name.
Okay, well, John worked for VoiceMap in the early years, created that tour in that time, but is a podcaster and has, you know, a voice within the community, I believe. I'm not, you know, really that much a part of it, but John created that tour as he loves going. It's on the Elfin Trail in Constantia, and that's where John likes to hang out. And I think maybe, you know, likes to smoke a joint, and I hope John doesn't mind me saying this, likes to smoke a joint and kind of think about the fairies. Sure. So, you know, he wanted to share that with the world. That tour is fantastic and really well produced. And I mean, he found a voice artist with an Irish accent who did an incredible job, and he's a musician who created an amazing soundtrack for it. It's an incredible tour, and kids love it. But we had boards made, wooden boards with the creatures from this tour engraved into the wood. Right. And I went and personally nailed these two trees through the woods, and they were removed within about 2 weeks. But that was all to promote the tour. We did try and promote it quite heavily. We had these illustrations that kids at restaurants around Constantia color in.
Oh, amazing. That's cool.
To try and promote the Elfin Trail. Locals are very difficult because locals can do it today or next week or next month or next year. I mean, you ask the average Cape Townian when they last went up Table Mountain.
Yeah.
It's been a decade.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so getting locals to do touristy things, there is a community of people who are looking for things to do and are just, you know, out there doing stuff all the time, but it's hard. Whereas tourists with limited time are much easier to persuade to do things now.
Sure.
And that's what you need.
And they're looking for things to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's very interesting. In a recent blog post, you kind of talked a little bit about 2023, the year gone by, and you've had some successes, well, some big numbers, kind of, I think it was it 1,000 producers or 1,000 creators on the platform, and then something like 500,000, no, how many tours was it?
It's definitely not 500,000 tours.
There was 1,000 tours.
Yeah, I think we're almost up to 1,400 tours at this point. So we crossed the 1,000 tours mark.
Yeah, because that was early in March last year.
Yeah. We're up to 500,000 app installs. Right. And actually a fair bit past that now, because the way these things scale, you know, I think close to half of those 500,000 app installs were last year.
Wow, okay.
Because it's...
So you're hockey sticking right now in terms of... That's amazing. Is that exciting? It's exhausting, I'm sure.
It's exciting. It's a very different business to the business I was running 4 or 5 years ago, even 2 years ago or a year ago. It's, you know, when a company really starts to take off and grow, you have to grow the team with it. And that scaling is a tricky thing to do because we've been very capital efficient. I said we raised some money through an incubator right in the beginning. That was the only capital we ever raised until last year. Well, let's say until the end of 2022. And so for basically from about 2017 to the end of 2021, halfway through 2022, we were running at break even. And so it was a tiny team. And we were focused on the kind of projects that I think are an opportunity for producers locally, right? So we would do tours for the waterfront. We did tours for Table Mountain Cableway, for Groot Constantia, for Spear, for Cape Point. I don't want to leave people off the list here. But we would go in, explain the concept to them, develop a brief that they would then sign on to, with sort of a list of locations that we were going to talk about and how we were going to talk about them. And then sometimes we would spend a lot of time interviewing people, and those are really interesting tours, and you get a lot of insight there and a lot of connection through the voices. I mean, voice is so powerful. You get to hear the winemaker at Groot Constantia, the viticulturalist, and the relationship between them. That's really useful, but it does mean that you're in a much longer production process, because you'll cut 2 hours of interview into 3 2-minute tracks and summarize the rest. So not every tour requires that you do all of this interviewing, and you can just work on a really nice script with one or two voices, and it's a read, it's not natural spoken conversation, and that's a, yeah, so you save time that way. But you develop the script, you get the client to sign off on the script, we have the ability to create text speech audio and then test. I mean, we can talk through the whole production process, but you know, you test that, then you do your final VO, you do your final tests, and you've got a tour. And I think going out to attractions around the country, to wine estates in particular, there's a big opportunity there.
So I asked Ian, what makes a good audio tour? What separates the merely informational from the inspirational?
You know, have an opinion, have a point of view, have emotions. I think something happens to people when you say, I want you to produce an audio guide, that they start to sound like, you know, an archaeologist in their 80s. They just become very boring, and I think they feel that that's what the format requires. But the more you kind of insert, and this was the original impetus for VoiceMap, was a way for people to tell stories about a place in a way that was connected to their own feelings, hopes, dreams, frustrations,
history
with the place.
Right.
Yeah, that personal connection, because when you can kind of piggyback onto that, you develop a feeling for the place yourself. Whereas the dry information, and I started with this in Rome, and I've gone nowhere with that. But the frustration was that you've got to kind of point to things very clearly. And now you've told me to direct my attention at this thing. Now use it, yeah. Right? So I'm giving you my attention. You know, deliver, yeah. Right? That's the thing. So instead of just saying, well, here are the horses and here's some information, because obviously they're interesting, you know, focus in as narrowly as possible on one specific horse, probably impossible, but maybe on some aspect of the landscape or something that, you know, you can get people's attention to narrow in. Because in narrowing somebody's attention, you're actually getting their attention, right? And now that they're focused. And that's why it's such a great medium, because you have people, you know, you know what they're looking at. You're almost there with them.
Yeah.
And they're giving you so much of their focus. Like when somebody's listening to a podcast, they're also doing the dishes or whatever, right? Driving, doing something else. When they're listening to an audio tour, and a GPS audio tour in particular, they're kind of looking where you tell them to look. So do tell them to look, because the more that you direct their attention, the closer that they're going to kind of lean in. And then once you've done that, don't waste it, right? Don't just go, well, yeah, that's from, you know, 2,000 years ago. Let's move on.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Tell a story.
Sure.
So, well, and that also implies be selective, right? Don't try and be comprehensive. Don't point to everything. Point to the most interesting things. Tell a story, and then find the next most interesting thing.
In terms of, let's start with the mechanics of similarities between podcasting and creating for VoiceMap, the production process and what you would have to learn and what you would have to, you know, go out and do the hard work for to create a VoiceMap tour.
We've spent a long time trying to refine the process of creating a tour, and we've built a tool called MapMaker that tries to take all of the guesswork, the trial and error, out of the process. So we have six steps, right? You map, you script, you test, you record, you do your final touches, and you publish. Right. And you have, throughout that process, the help of an editor sitting here in Cape Town who is assigned to your specific project and will work through each of these steps with you. We work with people who've never recorded any audio, and we will do our best to get them sounding like they recorded in the studio. We don't always get there, but we get close. But for people that understand audio and how that's different to simply writing a script and recording it, I think there's a lot of opportunity to make great tours, to make tours that are differentiated from what we already have, with the exception of something like the Elephant Trail, which was done by an experienced audio producer. So the first thing you do is you map your tour. You have to have the geography worked out. You know, you can do indoor tours. They're a bit simpler logistically. Outdoor tours with GPS playback, you need to give clear directions. You have constraints around audio time matching travel time. So if you imagine that you're walking from point A to point B to point C, point B is going to start playing automatically when you arrive at it. Right. Maybe you're not telling people to stop. You're just saying, okay, over on your right's this thing. Can you see it? Okay, let's keep moving. Because using time efficiently versus being in a large group and having to stop and listen to this person, maybe you can't hear at the back, and then the group disbands and
you lose the room.
Yeah, and then they have to kind of reform at the next location, and there's always, you know, somebody with ridiculous questions and somebody who wants to take 20 selfies. And one of the advantages of a self-guided tour is that you don't have to do any of that, and so you can use people's time efficiently and you can talk to them while they're moving.
Yeah, and they don't feel... I've always had this resistance to going on guided tours. I've done a few, but feeling like a tourist sheep being kind of corralled around the city and feeling also a little bit like a target in terms of, hey, look, there's some tourists.
Yeah, exactly. You've got the person waving the flag normally, and so it's pretty obvious. Whereas, you know, listening to headphones, you're just a local going for a walk. So the challenge then is that we're at point B. The person producing the tour pointed out that on their our right is that thing, and then said, keep walking. Now, we're going to tell a story that's 2 minutes long, but point C is going to get to us in a minute and a half. Right. So our story can only be a minute and a half. Okay. So our map maker actually takes the distance and estimates a talk time and a word count. Right. So you can then kind of match the narrative to the geography. And so that's the first step. You have that word count in your script box, and as you type it, it counts your words and tells you once you've gone over. But you then submit each individual location script to the editor. Their job isn't to kind of stifle creativity or to enforce a voice map style on to the producer. Their job is to get the logistics right, to give directions well, because that's something that you have to have heard directions given badly a few times to understand what the opposite looks like. You know, people will tack the directions onto the end of things. They'll go, right, so we finished talking about the thing, now go down to the end of the block, then turn left and walk for 100 meters and you'll see the thing. And people will remember that they have to start walking.
Right.
You know, that's
and the classic GPS thing of head southwest.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about?
You want your directions to be as contextual and simple as possible. You know, you're very much in the here and right now. And so that's the job of the editor assigned to your project. They will make sure that the logistics are sound. And so once they've reviewed it, you can then save with text-to-speech audio. You can actually save with text-to-speech audio at any point in the process. So you can prototype a tour in half an hour. I mean, it takes me, you know, 15 minutes to create a little tour that goes around the block that you can then download immediately, as long as you're using the same account in MapMaker as you are in the app, to go out and mess around, have a tour that is of your neighborhood. And, you know, you never intend to publish it. It's just privately available through your account. And it's your little sandbox to experiment with GPS playback and the potential of this medium. But the idea is that before you get to recording, before you get to that final audio, which in many cases is something recorded in a studio, you don't want to go into the studio more than once. So you want to test, and you can just do that with, you know, the click of a button. Maybe you make some refinements, you test again with text-to-speech. And at that point, the one recording should be the only recording, unless at some point down the line the tour needs to be updated. And you know, we actually edit audio for people. But if, you know, somebody's a producer and they want to edit their own audio, fine, happy with that too. And then you do some final touches, a description of the tour, you know, how to get to the starting point, any precautions, places you might like to stop along the way, just some stuff to help people in and out. And then the tour gets published and is available for sale both on our website and in-app through the App Store and Google Play, but also through resellers. So via to TripAdvisor, Get Your Guide, big online travel agencies.
In the app, if you're there, you're going to see what's around you. So I think that's okay. But do you know what other kinds of marketing do creators do, and how do you make people aware of VoiceMap? Is it through these partnerships as well?
Yeah. So we sell about 1/3 of our tours now through online travel agencies, and that's grown significantly in the last. And they have just, you know, they have a huge number of eyeballs because they spend a fortune on customer acquisition, mostly through Google search, but other ways too. And they're very much structured around attractions, right? So they will, you know, have a page for the Roman Forum, and then they'll have a list of tours that you can do that include the Roman Forum as part of the experience. But people search these also by price. So because a guided tour is typically more expensive than a self-guided tour, you can easily be at the top of that kind of sort. But also there are many places where there's just not enough demand for regular guided tours, you know, human guided tours. And these OTAs people go to, online travel agencies, people go to them to look for things to do. And if they're in a small town or just a medium-sized town, there's often no tour company that, you know, and if there is one, maybe they do a tour on Saturdays at 9 a.m. And, you know, if you're not there at the right time, you're out of luck. I guess at times, and I think Cape Town, you know, high season, there's availability issues as well, where all the guides are booked and have been booked for 2 weeks, and there's just no more supply. So there's, you know, physically guided tours have a lot of supply constraints. They take a bit of time to put together. So even if there is surplus demand and maybe there's a guide who actually is free, somebody has to come and put the whole thing together. So they need a bit of advance notice. So if you're looking for a tour at a busy time of year that you can do now, it's very hard for a guided tour to solve that problem, whereas a self-guided tour solves it really easily. And so some of our most successful tours are not in Paris or London or New York. They're in places like Carmel by the Sea, which is 2 hours outside of San Francisco, or what's another good example? Like just outside of Barcelona, you've got the Costa Brava.
Costa Brava.
Yeah,
there's lots of little villages there.
Yeah, so some of those villages do really well because...
Sure. And they're small enough that you wouldn't look for a guided tour. You just kind of wander around. Because I've been there. I've been in one of those villages. And, you know, you walk around and you don't think of it as big enough to have guided tours, even though they might exist. But then you also start missing context. You're like, oh, wow, this is a beautiful place, but I'm not learning anything. I don't know anything about it, you know. So inevitably you open up Wikipedia or Travel Advisor or something like that, or TripAdvisor, and you look it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, that does sound like it sounds like an exciting dream lifestyle in terms of there's this opportunity off the beaten track in places like go to Spain and cover the small towns, villages, and like everything outside Barcelona and Madrid. Find interesting people there, and they can tell their stories about these places that have history, you know, like being so close to Morocco and World War II and all that kind of... I mean, there's so many stories, of course. And then I guess it's a case of then building around that, like, you know, what kind of income could you expect from that? And I know that's going to be a very hard question to answer. But then I guess if you wanted to enact that kind of plan, what other things could you do at the same time or to make it to offset the cost of obviously traveling? And, you know, be young, be in a hostel, live on a shoestring is going to be one of the major answers. But yeah, I guess, like you said, there's a couple of producers in Europe who could do this full time. If you have stats or data, what's kind of an average, what could you expect as an income?
Yeah, that's a question that I would never answer so directly, because then somebody will come up to me in the street and be like, you said I could earn this. And
it depends is always the answer I've learned from Gavin Kennedy.
And, you know, there's just such a wide distribution. And sometimes the tours that we think are going to kill don't do that well. And the tours that we're like, well, we'll publish it, but, you know, don't think anybody's going to be rushing out to buy this. And they do really well. So I'm not necessarily the best predictor of success for a tour. I do think, you know, there's this sequencing issue for anybody in the modern economy about when things hit critical mass. You know, the people who were early adopters, they're the ones who benefit. And the people who come once there's a crowd, they struggle to get any kind of traction. And so you've got to take a leap of faith to some extent and kind of make an investment in these kinds of things. And I mean, you know, podcasting is a perfect example, right? People who started podcasting when it was this strange thing that nobody had heard of, they have huge podcasts that earn them an incredible living now. And to try and break into that market, it's possible that maybe not in this country, but certainly in the US, we've got some of our publishers talking to us about podcasting going into a sort of decline, where it's just so much more competitive now that getting growth on your individual podcast is much more difficult than it used to be.
Sure. And there's a post-pandemic slump, because the pandemic boosted podcasting so much that it hockey sticked, and now it's not. And in America, if you're not hockey sticking, then you're failing.
You know?
So it's I think more or less it's returned to the speed of growth that it had anyway. That would be its natural organic growth. And then obviously with, you know, the tech apocalypse and layoffs in every tech startup in the world kind of thing, that is, and Apple changing its algorithm to a degree, there have been a lot of kind of shocks in 2023 to podcasting numbers, all in kind of more on the international side than ours. But it does feel like, given what you've told me about last year being so busy and so many more app downloads coming last year, and also where we are with the Guild and what we're seeing in podcasting in South Africa, it feels like we're on the same upward trajectory now, where yes, you know, there's some very big players who, like, they're going to benefit the most because they were in early. But 2 years from now, it's going to be a much more saturated world. And I think that this is, you know, if you didn't start 10 years ago, start today.
You know? Yeah, that's right. So the people who took the leap of faith with us 10 years ago, you know, we had people who published tours not quite 10 years ago, but we had a tour of Venice, for instance, that was by a guidebook writer who created this fantastic tour. And I think she maybe did it in about 2017. And it was in 2022 that sales of this tour just suddenly took off. And, you know, so she was maybe 5 years too early. But nobody came along and competed with her in Venice because I guess there wasn't much reason to.
Well, they'd hear her tour and say, okay, for creatives, it's like someone's done this. Mm. So I don't want to go and compete with something in the same vein.
Yeah. Well, but now we've got, I think, 10 tours in Venice. So that's changed. But hers is still by far the best seller because it's the most established. It's got all of the ratings and all of the reviews. And people love that kind of validation.
Of course, yeah.
And so even if they're coming to the app for the first time, they've got no reason to trust one publisher over another. They trust the community. Yeah. They trust other people like them. And so the sequencing thing, you know, I think it's a very good time to start producing tours. I do think that there will be people who, you know, and I would say this because this is my business and you know, the passion that has dictated my life for a decade. So you know, just a slight bias, but I think that it's possible that people can build a lifestyle around this, that people can be digital nomads, produce great tours, develop a reputation for doing so. And, you know, we have users now who've done over 100 tours. They travel all the time. They're also often digital nomads themselves, right? We have this incredible user group of software developers, say, who are able to work from anywhere and so choose to travel through Europe, but go to co-working spaces. And, you know, the time zone's tricky because they're often on US time, but we've done user interviews and these are the kinds of people that are kind of our most regular users, our most valuable users. So there is a community there that you can kind of be a part of, but also serve.
Mm-hmm. Where are the kind of the opportunity areas that you see now for new producers? Like what kind of types of content, I guess, should they consider?
If you were to be somebody going out to Europe or to the US, just about anywhere, I'd say, I'm thinking Mexico is growing for us, parts of Asia are growing for us, talk to us, right? If you're looking to say, oh, well, I'm going to be, you know, traveling around, doing a bit of work that I can do remotely, and I'm looking for passive income, and I'm interested in, you know, I think my skills are a good fit. If you talk to us, we look at destinations, we look at data to decide where there are opportunities for new tours, and we can share that with you.
Sure. And would your advice, as you spoke about before, be go and find someone in that place and ask them to tell you their story rather than, oh, I visited Venice for a week and here's my tour. Like, you don't know the place. You don't have a personal connection to it or a history.
Yeah. Well, if you think about what the opportunity really is beyond having the worst tour in Venice, then the opportunity would be to develop a reputation as a producer. Right. So that if I'm going from Venice to Rome to Florence, you know, not in that order, to the Cinque Terre, to Napoli, to, you know, I'm doing a trip through Italy and I like that producer's tour, mm-hmm. and I'm going to look out for what they've done elsewhere in the region.
Right.
And so the better the tour, the more likely people are to keep an eye out for more by that person.
Right.
And I mean, there actually is a great example in Barcelona, a guy who now has, you know, he's got Spanish audio tours. Audio Tours Spain, I think, is the company he has set up that is how he's publishing the tours. But he's just an Australian guy, John, who's got a long history as an audio producer. Mm. And look, he lived in Spain and he understood a bit of the language and had some insight into the culture. But he just researched very thoroughly the tour, sitting at, he lived in a village about 2 hours from Barcelona, close to Tarragona, I think. And he would collect this data, map out the tour, and then go and test it. Maybe he did a couple of tours with guides, I'm not sure. But he would research this very thoroughly. And then he didn't have kind of deep insights, but he had a great sense of humor. And so he used that. And his tours are light, not overwhelming with information, not very profound, but people love them.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So I asked Ian what other kinds of fresh ideas or content types could be made with VoiceMap that might be slightly unexpected.
But look, we also see an opportunity to stretch beyond just self-guided tours into other kinds of travel content that I think would be primarily audio. I mean, we're thinking mostly about audio at the moment because there's so much downtime when you travel. You are in the queue for a big attraction. Like you can, if you want to go to St. Peter's, it's an hour, St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. That queue is on a good day, like an hour.
Yeah.
There's
theme parks, Disneyland.
There's all the time at the airport, you know, making you
train journeys and so on.
Exactly. So you've got all of this time, and maybe you're not looking for specifically geolocated, sort of on your left is, but you do want some context about the place. You know, you're standing in the queue at St. Peter's. Maybe you want, you know, a brief history of the Catholic Church,
right? Sure.
And that could be as
Something
pretentious
like
as you want it to be.
You know.
Yeah,
which
precisely.
Is a nice little did you know category all of themselves.
Yeah. So later this year we're going to be rolling out different content types, and there the focus would definitely be on not just a particular producer's tours, but other content that they offer.
So on the other alternative types, I've got written down here things like treasure hunts, events, even corporate events. You've got a Kenilworth tour run by school students that kind of introduced you to their suburb. Like, is there a limit to the kind of, would you ever put a filter down and be like, we don't want you to run your treasure hunts or your scavenger hunts on our platform? Like, or are you open to pretty much anything? Or are you looking forward to creating new kinds of content in that, like, very different from tours world?
We invest quite a lot of our own time alongside the producer, right? You get this editor. Like I say, not everybody has audio experience, so we have engineers that do that for them. And so we do look at things and think, this is very far from what we normally do, and we don't see a market for it. And it's not a great use of our time. We will let people make tours available privately, so we won't publish them, because then what happens is our users download a tour that they thought was more like what we normally do, and they get to that starting point of the tour and off they go, and they're like, what the hell is this? We've got, you know, a tour in Venice that the city's been overtaken by zombies and you have to flee, but it's targeted at kids and it's trying to teach them something about Venice in a way that, you know, isn't boring and old. And that's just very clearly labeled. And so we set some conditions around, you know, we need to make it super clear that this is not your conventional tour of Venice, so that people don't get confused, because people, it's nice in a way that they trust the VoiceMap app and the brand to deliver a specific kind of content, but they tend to be pretty lazy about reading the details. And so, you know, we might have a few caveats like that to say, well, yes, you're welcome to experiment, but you need to present it in a specific way. So we're very open to experimentation, but we do need to see some sort of opportunity for traction, because sometimes it's a real pet project and they want us to, like, bend over backwards and that then doesn't just require like any editor's time. You're looking at our most experienced editors who understand how to hack the system to do things that it doesn't normally do and not follow the normal process. And then we're like, well, hold on, these are busy people. And so it's, you know, we're very easy to talk to, and we will take any proposal seriously. But there are some things that we might say no to.
Sure. Is there a cost to working with your editor or to generally to producing on the platform? That's just something that you're bearing the cost of that time.
Yeah. So we invest alongside people in terms of the time that we put into the tours. We have plans that take you up from the most basic. The most basic means that you get all of the editor's time that you need at no cost, and we share revenue. And, you know, you can use that plan without any limit. It works very well, and it's, I think at this point, about 75% of our publishers are on that basic plan. But we then do have people who have specific deadlines, specific distribution requirements, and so we have plans that fit with what they need. We also will help with distribution marketing, so we have account managers that will make sure that your tour is being advertised, that it's on the online travel agencies, and that are paying attention to how it ranks, that are trying to help you optimize. So that's an additional service that's offered on some of our plans. The most common reason people have for going onto a plan is A, that they want to offer a tour for free. And so if you partner with a specific attraction, often they don't think of it as a revenue stream. They think of it as a visitor experience product, as something that they can do to make sure that people don't just come and kind of see the pretty vineyards or, you know, tick the box, but go away with the story. And obviously that's extremely valuable for these places. I think it's, you know, a lot of people go and visit a place like Groot Constantia and come away knowing next to nothing about it. Yeah. They're like, oh, that was pretty and the wine tasted good, but I couldn't tell you anything about it. And by the time they get home to the UK or Germany or whatever, they've forgotten all about it. Sure. So if you can tell them a story, there's value in that. Oh, sure. And so, yeah. So they want their tours to be free. And when that's the case, we charge either a monthly or annual hosting fee. And that's based on how many downloads the tour is getting. And we have other people who are selling the tours through their own channels, which is also an interesting opportunity. I mentioned Annie Sargent from Join Us in France. And she, in addition to selling through our app, through our website, and through the online travel agencies, sells through her own website, and I think maybe includes some tours for people who sponsor her on Patreon. And so she buys what we call download credits that she can use to issue vouchers that she can then do with whatever she likes. So she can sell those for any price she likes or give them away. And so that's another reason that people have for going onto a plan. Then, you know, we have a queue of things that we're editing. Sometimes it'll take us a few days to get to a submission. But if people want, you know, to be at the front of the queue, then there's a priority plan that will get them priority service. Sure. So little things like that. But really, there's no pressure. That's not really how we make money. We make money from people going out and doing tours.
Right. I mean, for me, like, over any period of time talking about this kind of thing, just ideas just spring up. I mean, a while ago I had this idea for Voice Map. I mean, what if you did a nightlife tour of Long Street? It's a small geographical area. You can walk up Long Street and they'll tell you what that bar is like, what kind of music it plays, what its drinks cost, and what the kind of clientele is like. I mean, is that something that you guys would entertain as a concept? Not that I'm pitching, and then, I'm not going to make
for,
it.
For
I'm
full
too
authenticity,
old.
At the end of the tour, somebody comes and steals your phone.
Yeah, exactly. Keep your phone in your pocket while you're listening to this tour.
Yeah. Look behind you.
Yeah, exactly. Look behind you again. Yeah. Keep looking.
If somebody comes up and says you have nice shoes, move away
now
quickly.
Now run. Yeah. This just became a running tour. Yeah.
Safest to
do it during the day, and then you go back.
Yeah, do it during the day. Yeah, of course. Like, absolutely, we would entertain that kind of tour. And we have more and more food tours being offered. I think that there's, you know, I'm not the best judge of what we should publish. We are open, we're an open platform. The only thing is we have to be careful about our time, sure, like anybody. And so if like a nightlife tour of Long Street, sure, we would publish that. We would, our caveat there would be like,
lots of safety.
Yeah, because we have had people get mugged while doing tours, and they're not happy about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, because you kind of, you close yourself off a little.
So just on to jump onto that, the antisocial factor of wearing headphones while doing anything, right? And the fact that most people travel together with someone, you and your spouse, you and your family, whatever it might be. Obviously, this is like a barrier to using the thing. You know, it's no different than wearing headphones on a tour, on a red bus tour, or you're in Venice and you've got headphones in anyway. But what are some of kind of the like the learnings that you've had about, do people have a resist? Is there a resistance you have to overcome there, or what kind of issues surround headphones and sociability when it comes to these tours?
Yeah, I think that maybe the important thing is to separate it from the antisocial screen, right? And how antisocial we've all become because we, you know, go out to dinner and then end up, you know, swiping through a feed and or scrolling through a feed. And so phones are kind of inherently a little bit antisocial. And so it's easy to kind of bundle voice map into that and say, oh, well, it's on a phone, it's antisocial. And when you're out in the world exploring, the last thing you should be doing is sitting on your phone. But we are, you know, I hate how much time I spend on the screen. And I see audio as one solution to that.
Yeah.
The more time you are engaging people with audio, the less time typically they're spending with the screen, right? That's one of the beauties of it. And so with GPS playback, it's very much, you know, put your phone in your pocket and listen to the directions and, you know, take in your surroundings. That's the whole point. So, you know, I it's not a direct answer to your question. To answer that more directly, doing a tour of any kind is about paying attention to one person. And often that's in a very contrived situation with a group of people who you otherwise wouldn't really want to spend much time with. And so, you know, I think the independence that it gives you, the ability to say, stop in, have a drink somewhere, and because you, the bar you just walked past is really interesting. Like, you know, that's better than being on a group tour and now we have to do this thing to completion or we are very rude.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Or we paid for this and we're going to get the value. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. But kind of just ducking out.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of people won't do that because, you know,
social pressure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It feels like an insult to the guide.
Precisely.
Right.
Yeah. And so the option to just stop, to sit down in the park, to, you know, spend a little bit longer here because it's really nice and or, you know, the sun's going down and you've got a beautiful view. These are very social opportunities.
Sure. And so, between points, there's probably a learned behavior where people take out one earphone and they chat to each other. And then when it starts talking, you're like, oh, but we're back on.
Look, a lot of people use AirPods and share the tours.
Oh, I see. So yeah, one in each. Oh, that's very clever.
And these days, if you've both got AirPods, you can pair them. So you can have two pairs of AirPods and just use the one device. So you only have to buy one tour.
Well, that was going to be my next question, was in terms of sharing content, you know, I can see how that works. Or I was wondering if there was another function like, oh, well, like GPS detects that there are four people next to each other. Therefore, they can share this audio or something. That sounds like a super complicated tech solution, actually. But yeah.
Especially if, you know, two of them are on iPhones and one of them's on a Samsung and the other's on a Google Pixel or whatever. then life gets quite unpleasant for the developers. And so, look, it's something that we've looked at multiple times. We probably will develop eventually, but it's not top of our priorities at the moment. Pairing, it's a Bluetooth solution, most likely. That's where you have that kind of proximity sensitivity is best through Bluetooth. And so it's coming. I just can't say when. The learned behavior you talk about, this is kind of why, instead of trying to bundle all of the best attractions into a single tour with long silences between each of these stops, we never talk about stops, talk about locations because we want to keep people moving. We don't like those kinds of tours because the tour then becomes an interruption. So I've used products in cars in particular where it becomes like this unwelcome presence, because just as the conversation got interesting, this bloody thing started up again. And you never know when it's going to, and you kind of, you, people just turn it off, because it ends up being that nobody wants to start talking, because then the thing's going to start talking and it's just going to interrupt. And by the time it's finished, everybody forgets where the conversation was. And it just becomes a kind of, this unwelcome presence. So it's much better it's all about managing people's attention, right? And just thinking through, how would you want your attention to be used while you are kind of sitting in headphones? Like, you know, if you're sitting in headphones, even if they're just earbuds and they're light, you don't really want to do that and have long silences and not be sure when the next audio is going to come in. So you kind of, we reassure people, you know, you're in the right place, keep going. If people get off track, we actually tell them. We did a tour with Ian McKellen, who was Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, and as part of that we had him record our lost warning. So if you are going in the wrong direction, if you're not getting closer, no, it says not all who wander are lost, but it looks like you might be. Now's a good time to take a look at the map on your screen. We did get him to do the You Shall Not Pass, well, sort of, for the actual tour. Right. There's a corridor that, you know, you have to go through to get to the next point on the tour, but it looks like maybe it's not public access. And he says, if anybody stops you, just tell them that you have the disembodied voice of Ian McKellen in your ear, and you shall pass.
That's great.
And
that's awesome. So again, I've got two more questions for you, but now you've just sparked another one in me, which is like, having seen podcasts recently, I've taken a distinct turn for the celebrity. Smartless, Conan O'Brien, obviously Joe Rogan, like dominating the charts there. In terms of voice map, you say you've done work with Ian McKellen. For some reason, the idea of Kevin Smith giving you a tour of his suburb in Los Angeles is more interesting than me giving you a trip, my tour of that suburb in Los Angeles, right? So do you foresee like a future where people are going to be, in terms of, let's talk about the South African context here, I've got a comedian like Jason Goliath. He's going to give the tour of District 6. You know, that's going to get more attention, right? Because there's an audience there already, first of all, and he's a comedian, number two, so he's got innate skills. But do you think influencers are going to get involved in voice map?
We've tried it with, I mean, the Ian McKellen tour is, I'm not even sure it's our most popular tour in London, and it's free. And it is probably our most popular tour in London, but not by miles and miles and miles, right? So, and he put it out on Twitter and put it out on Facebook when it was first published, and he's got a following of millions. The problem is that you need people who are in the right place at the right time. And that is, you know, that the overlap between his audience and people who are planning to go walking around the West End. It's a tour about the history of the theaters there. It's a very cool tour. But it again comes down to, look, I believe we will eventually find a strong local market, and some of the other content types that we're interested in offering are part of that because they're more passive. and maybe they will inspire people to go out and actually do the tours, rather than having to construct this moment. I mean, we had a meetup group for a long time where we would go and do tours with people in a group. So we were reconstructing the very thing we were trying to get past as a way of getting people, you know, once you scheduled something, you could get locals out doing a tour, because then there was, you know, there was, it was now or never. And I think that the same is somewhat true. Look, obviously a tour by a celebrity of their neighborhood, and you know, the thing is, Ian McKellen's tour is of the theatre district in London. He's performed there. He wouldn't even let us say for how long on the tour, because it's so long,
right?
And it made him sound so old. And
he's the best person to do it, even if you take away his celebrity.
Yeah, exactly. And right. So it does well because he's got some name recognition, but the first qualifier was that he actually cares about it, that he's passionate. And we didn't know that that he was as passionate as he is going in. So, you know, I planned the route myself, and then we put a lapel mic on him and we had figured out exactly what we were going to talk about anyway, but we were like, let's put a lapel mic on him, take him around the route, and he'll give us some anecdotes as we go along. Turned out that he knew more about the history of the theatre industry in the UK than just about anybody. He was extremely passionate and knowledgeable. And so, you know, it just made that to me is more important. Mm-hmm. Not everybody would agree with me. Sure. I've got one particular investor who keeps trying to persuade me that we need, you know, Metallica was touring Singapore. He's Singaporean. He's like, we need a Metallica tour of Singapore. I'm like, well, why? What do I need to know about Singapore from Metallica? What do they know about the place that I don't know, or that a local doesn't know? This is pointless. And he didn't like that answer very much, but, you know, he's not in charge. So
cool. Are you going to share this link with him?
He knows how I feel.
Okay.
It's pretty clear.
Cool. Do you have any Game of Thrones shooting location tours? Because I know that became an actual guided tour phenomenon during the time of that show.
No. Well, yeah, we've got some tours of Dubrovnik, but they're not Game of Thrones themed.
Hmm. In Doesn't Spain, there's plenty of locations as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Alcázar in Sevilla, in Seville. So that we don't have a tour there. We would love to do one. I mean, I'd imagine a partnership with, say, HBO to produce
and be able Game to use of some of their licensed clips of the conversations that happened in those spaces. And
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. We're interested in doing that.
Yeah,
we're just not there yet, I don't think.
Right.
You know, we don't have. The market isn't quite large enough yet.
Right.
But maybe, you know, maybe in a couple of years.
Well, then this is my final question is, like, what's your immediate focus on the next, say, in 2024 for VoiceMap? And then in the future, what's your dream? Like, where do you see it going?
So our focus at the moment is on improving the experience. So we're busy working on some really cool features for indoor tours that, you know, we had this unique selling point in terms of how well we do GPS tours. Other people have tried to do GPS tours, but nobody's ever got it right, and I think we have. And so now we have enough traction that we can start to do the much simpler job of populating a library of indoor locations. Exactly, the British Museum. I mean, I love the British Museum, and I think there's 500 possible ways of exploring it, 500 different perspectives, different ways of making your way through that space. The Louvre, we're working on a tour, I might have already said. It's so much easier because GPS doesn't work, and so you don't have to know where the person's going, and so you don't have to give them directions. You don't have to kind of manage their attention in the same way. They have to be a little more self-reliant. But they have fewer options, right? They don't have to figure out where to go at every single corner. And so, and building a better interface around that, trying to innovate, trying to differentiate ourselves from some people who are already in that space. And I think that there, again, there's opportunity for local producers because that's pretty much untouched, right? That and underdeveloped in this country as well. Doesn't take that much to put together a basic tour of an indoor space, and we don't really have that as a thing much in this country. The investment in actually providing physical devices is not necessary.
Mm. The Zeitz Mocha Museum, I mean, it does have information about the artists and the pieces, but it could go so much deeper.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And would those be GPS triggered or not?
GPS doesn't work indoors.
Right. Yeah. It's also multi-level, which makes it more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There are technologies, and have been for a long time, technologies that allow some degree of location awareness indoors. But none of them has ever really matured. I mean, I've been keeping an eye on them for a while, being like, when this technology comes along, when this really kind of reaches critical mass, that's when we'll go all in on indoor tours. And I've just gotten to a point where I'm like, no, there's no technology that ever has shown like it's going to get real traction. So let's just do this the old-fashioned way with like press the next button. But you know, we have some stuff that we're doing around that. That's going to be quite interesting. And then we're going to be doing playlists. So we're calling them place lists. And the thing that I've wanted to do, one of our earliest tours was of the Sunset Strip in LA. And that's, you know, that's where Led Zeppelin used to throw TVs out of hotel windows. And, you know, so
Oh, just Hollywood. I mean, the amount of, you know, stories of madness and mayhem from rock stars. I mean, there it makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe less so Singapore.
I think the hotel staff asked them if they at least looked first. And that's like in a tour, there's a tour of, you know, that there's something happening here. What's it called? I don't know the name of the song, but Buffalo Springfield, famous song. Yeah. And I won't, you know, alienate your listeners by trying to sing it. But that actually started with a kind of small riot at a particular club that was the inspiration for the lyrics of that song. Mm. The Doors used to perform at the Whiskey A Go Go. A number of bands got their start along the strip, and it was the kind of epicenter of the hair metal era. Right. And those kinds of songs, to license them for an audio tour, are you kidding? Nobody's got the time to try and negotiate that or the money to kind of put up front but if you use Spotify or Apple Music and build a playlist that then mixes with the voice, right, you kind of get this really deep sense of place. And so that's coming soon. And look, I think our focus, so that's on the user experience side, and we're always improving the tools that we make available to producers. We're building out the interface for indoor tours to make more possible there, and then distribution, right? So I'm traveling an enormous amount this year, and a lot of that is just meeting people who can help us get tours in front of more people. You know, we're growing really nicely. It's mostly organic. We're spending very little money on advertising, although we will be spending much more than we ever have before this year. And we just, you know, we're really excited about the direction of things. We just got to keep it going. So we've grown the team, and we have people who are focusing specifically on how we work with online travel agencies and making sure that we are at the top of those search results. We are building partnerships with kind of much more local, they call them DMOs, destination marketing organizations, to help us get tours in front of people in destination. Mm-hmm. And some of it, what I've already talked about. So looking at new mediums, new formats that are complementary to a self-guided audio tour, and starting to publish those and make those available to people for that downtime.
Sure. Awesome. Well, Ian, thank you so much. I could honestly, I've got three more questions that I'm going to ask you after we finish, but we do have to finish. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing VoiceMap with us. The website is voicemap.me. So if you're a podcast creator and you're looking at, think of it as an incredible opportunity to create something interesting, to experiment, to expand your skill set in terms of storytelling, interviewing, spatial audio, if you're into that kind of thing, and you've got the time and the passion, then make something and see how it does, experiment and build, and then I think the fact that you add you have so much support for the creators is great too. So talk to Ian and his team about what your ideas are. Essentially, you know, pitch them and see what they say. Like, and yeah, have at it. Give it a go.
Yeah, thanks, John. I think, you know, it's really worth getting in touch with us at the moment because we are looking at additional formats that are not so geographically constrained. And so, you know, building a network of, you know, audio producers that can help us do that is a priority for us at the moment. So get in touch, even if it's not specifically about an audio tour that you have in mind at a specific spot. You know, we are happy to chat.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks, John.